Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Andrea Cavalieri, the CTO at Newsflare. So the first thing is that I think the space that you occupy at the moment, and I think that you've always kind of been in, media, publication of some sort, right, throughout your career.
Yeah, that's true. I started with a classic move. Actually, IBM in Milan wanted me, and you usually couldn't say no to IBM at the time. It was the biggest out there, so that was easy. But then, I felt it was a bit boring, and I received an offer from a radio station that is probably the finest thing out there, so completely the opposite. But I could stay in my field and at the same time working with content, working with media, and we also in the same that period we started a video channel as well, so it was quite interesting. And from there on was all about content, video or audio, and especially video. And so yeah, that was all my career basically.
It's a really interesting space at the minute, I think, for a lot of different reasons. I think what we consider as news, is probably a loose term now. But aside from that, the actual technical side, making the content, getting it distributed now, the dynamics have completely changed. I can imagine when you did start at the radio station, that whole process of kind of getting the assets made, getting the content made, distributing it, was a lot different than kind of what we're working with today. And also, I'm sure it's probably more competitive now, if that's right to say. I'm just guessing, because I suppose everyone now has kind of the means to, make content.
Yeah, that's completely different now. This change, it used to be, 3, 4, 5 main operators in every country. From the state one, so BBC or in UK, for example, and then private, was very hard to deliver content because you couldn't have the same power that a radio signal have at the time. And now it's completely different. Now it's super easy to distribute content and deliver content thanks to the cloud. And you have thousands of content makers, so anyone can be a successful blogger or successful podcaster, or video or YouTuber or something like that. So that's completely different from where I started. And it's much easier now from a technical point of view. It's probably not easier for a consumer point of view, because how do you pick what is good? How do you pick what is, even what is true, what is fake, is now a very complete scenario. So yeah.
So it sounds to me like if we think about it from a technical perspective now, the kind of desirable traits for a technical person in that space has probably completely changed from the actual technical capabilities to make the content to now. I'm sure there's a lot of analytics, data maybe even involved. Can you speak a little bit about that and how, from even your perspective now, the teams that are now part of the organization like Newsflare,
you probably have certain technical talents that I'm sure you didn't have when you were started at the radio station.
No, that absolutely. The summer road even didn't exist at all. So that was pretty basic. You have people working for a server side of you, and then you had a speaker, and then you had a sound engineer. That's it. That was pretty easy. But now, absolutely, you need someone to working on the front-end side of the website. So people focus on those kind of KPIs and performances, and then you need to deliver good content, so you need someone that create the content. In our case, they are user-generated, but in other cases, you have a professional that can create content, and you need editors, or you need motion designers to present the content better. And so you need to analyze both sides of the business, basically. Are you receiving the content? Do you have a platform that can ingest million of minutes per month? And you are able then to elaborate, and then you are able to deliver that. So we now curate all the aspects. Once before was just going in front of the microphone and that's it, that was basically done. So it's now, because now you can measure everything, every single button, you can see if they're working well, if they're not working at all. You can A/B test everything. It's now much more complex. You can and you have to improve every day, basically.
It's, I'm sure, quite the challenge as well from the, to keep ahead of the game, if you like, from a recruitment perspective, because you must always be tempted by new technologies, and there's always the consciousness that, you know, we have to start putting our content on a certain platform, and that might require a different technical capabilities. So you always have to be kind of conscious of that. How do you manage that kind of process to understand what's coming, to make sure you don't get kind of left behind, and then recruiting accordingly with, those kind of technical specs, I suppose.
Yeah, basically two things you have to do there, or at least what I do, is from one side, I try to be a consumer. So I try to consume as more, podcast or video platform, or video services like YouTube or Netflix or something like that. And because sometimes you have a new technology, but the consumer don't love it, so it's useless, basically. But on the other end, you have to try and to test to see where everyone else is going. So conferences and article and newsletter, and you try to understand where the technology might go. But at the end of the game, I need to find a point where they meet, so the consumer needs and the technology can meet the realistic way, because something that came out, it doesn't, or it haven't done yet. And I don't know, I think about 360 or virtual reality. It's out there. It's been a while now, but I can't see at the moment consumers really going crazy with that. So we are ready if it comes, and we try to be ready for that, but maybe it never comes. So maybe it might not ever go mainstream, for example. So sometimes you have to bet on something, but at the same time, you have to be 100% sure people are really using it. So we work with, baby steps. So we put something out and we see how it works with our members. So we don't, at the moment, we don't really go crazy and chase any new trend, because it can be dangerous sometimes.
It's got to be down to the people and skills that they have, right? Is it now an economy for getting people on board that have skills where they can, be agile in their approach? They can take on new skills. It doesn't mean that you have to hire new people. It's more having that kind of fundamental skill set, but it can be kind of applied a little bit more broadly. Is that kind of the desirable traits now? Which I suppose it is in some instances, and it's also really compelling because, 10, 20 years ago, it's all about having a very niche skill. And now we need technical people who are versatile.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you are a startup or like us, sort of, we are still there on that mindset. You can't hire a person every time for a different skill. So you need to ask the tech team to be agile, to adapt to new technology, to be ready. But I'm quite lucky. Usually, usually developers are really keen to do that. They love to learn something new because they know they can spend it maybe in the future. They know they can put in their resume. So, yeah, but this is very important. Sometimes it happens you find someone that doesn't really want to go out from the comfort zone. But I don't know. I don't think it's possible anymore. I don't think because you have so many things coming out and you need to keep up to the game. So you have to be agile and organizational level, but also on a personal level for sure.
Interesting. So I want to talk a little bit about you as well. You know, I think it's quite clear that, you know, you've made the career from content. Has that always been something of interest to you just in general? And how much of a motivator is that to kind of continuously doing a good job, you know, being invested in kind of the brand and you know, the actual product? Is that a big component now?
It is a big component, yeah. It all started with me being, again, a consumer. So I used to love to listen to the radio, some radio station, and then I start to think, oh, I would like to list this program and this other one, but they are all the same time. I can do that. And then organically I start to work with this radio station, and then we start to think of something about podcasts, even before the podcast was something. But then if they don't follow you technically speaking, you can do everything alone. So we didn't have enough budget to think of something about that. But then it became mainstream, and so we followed the stream, basically. And so, yeah, content is something very important. You need to keep up. In our case, what the most important thing is verification, because we work with user-generated content. So even there, we are starting to work with new technology like AI, and similar stuff, because verification and be sure the content is not fake news. That is something very important at the moment, and it's very important for our brand. We need to keep up the game with that thing. We can't allow anything goes wrong on that side. And the same is probably for other competitors there or other business that work with content. That you can never sleep for a bit, for a moment, because it won't be a good service to your members, and then won't work.
Interesting. Yeah. So, do you have to have? I think, you know, you made some great points there, but I think it's probably conflicting between something that you feel passionately about, kind of breaking, and stuff that you know you need to kind of break. Does that matter, or is it just about, you know, the process that you're passionate about, the kind of media? Because I think that people can probably easily get confused by that.
Yeah, it's a balance. You need to be in the right balance where you want to disrupt, but at the same time you won't do it too much. But yeah, I think your mindset, especially if you are a startup, it should be always to disrupt a business, to try something new, try something different, risk a bit. But you also have to be smart enough to understand what is not working and quickly understand that it's not working, so you can go back and try something new again and again. Yeah, that is, it's very important.
Is it, you know, I suppose on a personal level as well, is it, you know, I look at a lot of news now, I think, you know, this is quite clickbaity, and I think there's a lot, it's lacking in substance in a lot of ways. You know, is this something that, you know, you're personally aware of? Is it something that, you know, you wish there was more kind of substance now and less fake news and stuff like that?
Yeah, that, absolutely. And also I think the social network or the website like us or content distribution business. They need to be aware and they need to do the right job, like was with newspaper before, where they had responsibility to deliver a good job. So on a moral level, I think we should do that, and I think also those every member of the content community, if you want, should do that. So you won't have so much futile content distribution if such an app will be more, smart on how, the way they distribute that, if the social network won't allow fake news to go out there, we won't probably read a lot of them. So, yeah, I think we have the moral due to be better on that, and everyone else. Yeah.
I think so. I certainly hope we see a lot of change with that regard. I think it's important, isn't it? And I think it's nice that at least people are conscious of not everything they read is truth. I think that's kind of having diminishing returns, but still something for it to be aware of. Just on a social note, nothing to do with anything else. It's just a consciousness. And it's conflicting, isn't it, as well, I think, in a lot of ways. And, I'm sure you guys are kind of battling that as a startup and trying to disrupt. So I think it's all the more reason to be compelled by the kind of the job that you're doing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure it's enough yet. I'm not sure everyone is really on the same page. Sometimes I see people believing fake news, obviously fake news, and even when you try to discuss that, they say, yeah, it's fake, but it could be right. So somehow it's still a good news, and this is, I don't know, it's, we need to do better on that. We need to be sure that the message is clear, that it's something fake. You shouldn't even start to read it. Shouldn't be out there.
Yeah, exactly. It shouldn't be. There should be some kind of, you know, validation certificate before a piece of news can, you know, just like a Twitter account or something with a green tick or something like that, you know, it's validating that this piece of news is, you know, has substance to it.
Yeah, it used to be on a, I don't know, personal level or a news organization level. It now should be probably a content level. So it should be, yeah, this news is different point of view, but the news is basically true, instead of being anything that can be like it is now, basically.
Yeah. Well, I hope someone picks up that business idea I just came up with. Who can validate news? Good luck on that one.
Yeah, that was something.
So, you know, aside from that, you know, technically speaking, you know, as CTO, are you as hands-on as you used to be? And how is that kind of dynamic working?
Yeah, I always try to be hands-on. I like to code and I like to see where we're going. Of course, my time is less and less on that. But I always try to. And even when the guys have some problem, they come to me just to talk, like to do a bit of rubber duck debugging, but I take a look at the code. Sometimes it's something very, very stupid, and we can look at together. I try to. It's less and less, but especially when we go through new technology, I try to be the first one to do something and to develop something. It's not always possible, of course. But yeah, I like it, and I still try to do that. I think it's also important that, I don't know, your team see you are still on the game and you are understanding deeply what they're doing, and you are appreciated deeply the effort they're putting on the stuff you're doing.
Yeah. It must be something that you have to, you know, really consider and be conscious about now is, you know, the kind of impact of the morale, the culture around the people as well. It must be something that I suppose is a big part of your role as much as anything now, is the kind of people side of it and, you know, the way that you're kind of portrayed to them.
Yeah, I think for everyone that is managing a team, I think that's the basic. You have to respect your team and recognize the effort they're putting in what you're doing. And to do that, I think you deeply need to understand what they're doing and what we're working on.
Is it important for you then to show that you're hands-on? What are the kind of You know, is it important? What are you kind of focusing on, I suppose, from that side of things, you know, to get people behind everything? I think I was talking not too long ago about someone and with someone, and we were saying that you don't have to be bought into the brand necessarily, but you can still be bought into the team and what, certainly from a technical perspective, what they're doing and what they're working towards, and get bought into that. Do you still feel that there's that element of kind of getting people to buy into what you're working towards? Do you feel like a salesman sometimes, you know, trying to get people motivated? Or do you just think that, you know, it's they're kind of motivated from the get-go, you know?
No, I think it's important. I think it's important if everyone is on the same page, everyone is understanding where the business wants to go. And this happened also with I don't know, my CEO. We all want to be on the same page, and we all want to understand and agree the goals and the targets. And I try to move that with my team, so they know that what we are doing is not meaningless. They know what we are doing. As a reason behind that, sometimes they don't agree, but most of the time, 99% of the time, they agree. And if they are on the same page, I think they work better, they are better motivated, and they do a better job.
Awesome. Well, I like it, mate. And it seems to be working. You guys seem to be, you know, growing quite quickly out there. You know, you said it's a startup. Is that that dynamic of an environment, was that something that you were used to before? Is it something that you feel you thrive in? Because it is quite different, isn't it?
It is. I tried a couple of times in different environments. It didn't work, but I think here in London, there is the right environment. So it's working well. And it's something that I like, because you try to disrupt a business, you try to do new things, it's a bit less formal, and we you try to put a bit of fun on it. And so, yeah, it's something that I like it, and it's an experience that I love to do. I won't be sad if I have to repeat it again, for example. So, yeah, it's something that I love.
Brilliant, brilliant, yeah. Well, I think you definitely get a sense, great sense of kind of autonomy, and I think that's, you know, a compelling thing for people who work for you as well. A startup is you kind of have to take ownership of a lot of things, and probably more quickly than you would in a slightly larger organization. So I think that's compelling for people. So a lot of the things that I think corporate people are trying to fight to kind of engage employees, startups do have, and I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, and also now that we are growing, every time we try to repeat, okay, how do you keep the same environment, the same mode, the same feeling that we had 2 years ago, that we had when we were just 5 of us or 7 of us? We are trying to, it's not easy, of course, it might not be always possible, but we are trying to replicate the same mood every time we start a new, I don't know, we have a new starter, or we have a new 3 or 4 or 5 starters. We always try to repeat the same experience, because it was fun and it worked, so it might work again and again.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, I like it. I think it's a fun environment. You know, I myself have worked for startups. It's a tremendous environment to work in, and I think you know, aside from that, the fact that you guys are growing must be, you know, really, really exciting to see kind of what happens. And, you know, obviously the kind of the team structure and your role, it'll just kind of continuously evolve, I would think, as the company grows.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I'm doing now. It's not the same as I was doing before. A bit of more responsibilities, but also bigger results. So it's somehow is funnier, is more interesting. But yeah, we spoke about being agile before. It's also about your role and everyone's roles, because it's changed every month, every 2 months. Something new came in, something old you can leave it back or pass to someone else. Yeah, you have to keep that mindset. You have to be able to change quickly. The quicker you are to change, the more successful you are, probably.
You know, when you look back at some of the things that, you know, you've accomplished, some of the things that you're still motivated to work towards, You know, do you take kind of a greater sense of pride from the things that you've achieved and the things that, you know, and the position you're in now, which I'm sure you obviously must. But aside from that, you know, some of the failings, you know, have they been just as impactful, and, you know, are they important to be transparent about failings, you know, especially when it comes to team?
That's probably the most important thing. That's the main thing. Be transparent on the communication. Be transparent on what is not working, on what we fail. Share the failings and understand what went wrong. And it's probably the most important thing. If you don't want to repeat your mistakes, you have to be transparent. You have to acknowledge at least that something went wrong, and you have to do it as quick as possible. That's probably the most important thing.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it shows kind of a lot of humility in a leader as well, doesn't it, when you can say that. And I think it encourages people to be, you know, I suppose a bit more innovative in the things that they do instead of kind of playing it safe. If you want a team, especially in a startup environment, to you know, really kind of disrupt, they have to be innovative. And you can't be innovative if you're kind of clouded by the fear of failure because you think that, you know, your boss is not going to be happy about your failings. You know, it should be the opposite. It should be, oh, you gave it a shot, didn't work, but, you know, can we learn quickly from this and will it make it better?
Yeah, and for that I have to thank our founders, because they always say to me, we have no problem with failing, we have no problem with mistakes or something like that, as long as we know, as long as we know as quick as possible, as long as we learn something from it. And I'm trying to do the same thing with my team. So sometimes, I don't know, you can see a developer panicking, oh, I did a mistake, and nothing wrong, as long as you told me and we can fix it. And usually you can fix everything. It's very few things you cannot fix. So this should be our philosophy. If we do some problem, we can fix it. That's it. And this is something that I learned and something I'm trying to teach to everyone else. And this is quite important.
Brilliant. I agree. All right. Andrea, I think we'll kind of shut it down now. I'm getting close to 30 minutes, but it was really interesting talking with you. It sounds like such an interesting space that you're working in, ever changing. I'm sure it keeps you on your toes, and also I really like your approach to you know, to your team as well. It's really impressive. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.